Thanks for joining us here on Service to School Stories. Your hosts for this season are Alec Emmert, Service to School CEO and Navy veteran.
And Sydney Mathis, Chief Program Officer and former College Admissions Officer. This season, we'll cover topics as it relates to higher education, military service transition, and career opportunities and outcomes for veterans. Join us as we share student stories, inside tips from the admissions office, and conversations with employers actively hiring student veterans. Here we go.
Welcome to the podcast. Our guest today is Amanda Robbins. Amanda is a former nuclear submarine officer who is earning an EMBA at the Wharton School. She is serving as the Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer for Solar Technology, Inc., a traffic control and traffic safety company based in Allentown, Pennsylvania. She is also a committed member of the Service to School team, serving as an applicant ambassador. Amanda, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Excited to participate.
Yeah, fantastic to have you on. And so we'd like to just kick things off by having you just tell a little bit about yourself, your background, where you're from, and what drew you to the military.
Okay. So I grew up in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and I ended up going to the Naval Academy. So both my parents graduated in 1990. So an easy family tradition. In fact, I'm a fourth generation naval officer. So long history of naval service in our family, which drove me to the Naval Academy. And just as I was in high school is when they started opening submarines up to women. So I went in kind of with the initial desire to join the nuclear submarine community. So I had selected a nuclear engineering major, my plebe year. While I was at the academy, I met my husband there. He was a classmate. He was also 2017. I was part of the women's swimming and diving team, and I also did Navy cheerleading. And then after graduating and commissioning, I went down to Charleston to begin the nuclear officer pipeline. And then I did a JO tour on the USS Georgia out of Kings Bay. And then I ended up resigning my commission at my 5 years obligation to come up and help my family back in Allentown at our family business, Solar Technology. And I didn't have any business background, so selected the EMBA program at Wharton, which is close by in Philadelphia. Found Service to Schools on LinkedIn, filled out one of those applications to get matched with an ambassador. And I was matched with somebody who had a very similar background, also academy grad, also went to Wharton's EMBA program. Really good fit, pretty much gave me all the advice and insights that I was looking for out of the program. And kind of that was the only school I really ended up pursuing. So, and I came to Solar Tech in a engineering product development role. I spent about a year there, applied to the EMBA, started the EMBA. And then in 2023, the CFO, also my mother, passed away. So I stepped into that position. That's my current position. And then I'm continuing the second year of my MBA.
No, sorry about your loss. I've lost a parent as well. And it's very difficult. And it's tough to kind of keep things going, keep things together after that. So hats off to you for doing that. But just taking a step back, so there was so much to unpack there. So you and I have a very similar background. We're both submarine officers, both Wharton MBAs. But the one thing you said that really interested me was, so like from high school, you wanted to be a submarine officer. So that's true?
That's correct. My dad was a submarine officer.
Oh, very
back
cool.
Back when it was all men and it was all fun and games. And not that he wasn't supportive. He was more than excited. But he's like, oh, that's going to be different. So,
That's crazy, because so very few people go to the Naval Academy wanting to be submarine officers. So you're one of the few. So from day one, that was what you wanted to do and your main focus. And so you talked about the nuclear engineering major there. And I'd like to hear about, for our listeners, the type of training that you do at the Naval Academy to become, a submarine officer. I take it you did some submarine cruises. As a nuclear engineering major, you were also probably involved in like the Submarine Dolphin Club and things like that. And I wanted to hear about your experience there at the Naval Academy from going there with a desire to become a submarine officer to the end result of you being commissioned as one.
Yeah, so I was always very impressed with the submarine community, even at the academy. I always thought that the professors they had there and the officer representatives they had there were by far the most compatible for me. And I had entered kind of at a prime time for females in submarining, where they were really trying to kind of like grow that demographic, and a lot of the early females were like pioneering. So there was a lot of excitement behind female integration on submarines. Which made me feel extra welcome and extra excited about it. So, yeah, I mean, I thought my experience coming from the Naval Academy, I felt very, very prepared for the submarine community when I got there.
Gotcha. And so did you do like in your summers, did you spend them on submarines, or how did you better prepare yourself for that, eventual role you took on?
Yeah, I actually wasn't selected for a summer cruise, so I went on a surface fleet cruise going into my senior year. So I'd been on the submarine for like the Protramid, like little week thing that they send everybody, but it was pretty selective at the time. So I think they were prioritizing females that were more on the edge or ones that had higher order of merit rankings, but I didn't actually get to do that. But as far as the mentorship goes, all my professors in the nuclear engineering major were prior submariners who really liked sharing stories and were really enthusiastic about the community and made me feel comfortable with the choice, even though I hadn't really gone on one. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, actually, so I'd actually never been on a submarine when I went subs. It was I had a crazy story that's not the focus of this podcast, but I feel you. So it was definitely a crazy experience for me the first time that hatch closed and we got underway and went deep, because I was like, yep, I'm in it now, and I made my choice, and there's nothing I can do about it. But fantastic. And then you mentioned being a pioneer, as a female submariner. What was that process like? I take it, when you got to your ship, you're on a guided missile submarine. So it was one of the I believe that class was like one of the first that got integrated male female. Were there other females that were your mentors, or what was the kind of breakdown of the crew at that time?
So when I had gone to the Georgia, they had female officers for a few years prior to me, but I was part of the first fully integrated deployment with
Wow.
integrated enlisted. And that presented its own challenges that I'm sure that all submarines that were going through integration presented. Because I showed up and the Georgia was coming out of, they were in dry dock, and so we were getting ready to kind of go back out on deployment. So we had to redo the berthing and the bathroom and
Oh, wow.
all of our policies and everything, and the whole crew kind of had to adapt to this shift in having enlisted females. Because the officers, they're a little easier. They have their own quarters, their own space, and everything. So, but I mean, it was quite an experience. I mean, I think it's something really rare to be a part of, to kind of go through something like that and see all of the challenges and the successes of a big cultural shift like that. So.
Yeah, it's very cool. And for our listeners, we talk about dry docks and things like that for submarines. Every few years, submarines will have to go into what we call dry docks, for the shipyards, to get really just kind of like updated, modernized, really kind of like overhauled. If you think about kind of like gutting a house and redoing the interior, that's kind of like what's done there. So you took that submarine from the shipyards to deployment. I did the opposite. I was on an operational submarine, and we took it to the yard. So I took a perfectly well working submarine, took it to the yards, and then departed it when it was all cut up. So different experience, but definitely a cool one. And then, so talk about your decision to separate from the military. So you achieved your goal of becoming a submarine officer, and were you kind of dead set on doing 5 years and getting out, or was there a decision process that went in there? And then, how did you make the decision to go back to Allentown to get into this company that your family was involved with?
Kind of had that. I'm an only child, so I always kind of had this opportunity back in Allentown. But I didn't know, like going into it, I wasn't always a five and diver. I considered doing a shore tour. And I was married to a surface warfare officer who I didn't know if he wanted to move or if he wanted a career. So we did our schooling and our pipeline, and in the middle of both of our time, we were like, this has been an experience, but like the military has its challenges, especially we were both operational. We never saw each other. It would be like a high five. We were on different shifts. It was definitely challenging, and compounded with COVID kind of on top of that period. Like, it was just very isolating, and neither of us were super happy with with doing like a long-term military career. So and I'm lucky that my husband was more than willing to come up and work for Solar Tech too. He's our national sales manager, so he's also getting an MBA and positioning or being groomed to be an executive of the company as well. Yep, we had made the decision. We're like, okay, we're going to go back. And my parents wanted to retire too. So, and they had asked, and we're very, very close. So that kind of all led to the decision to put in the resignation at the 5 years. So yeah, we have no GI Bill. We didn't do any short tour or anything. We just stepped off the boat and moved up to Allentown and started working at Solar Tech. So.
Cool. And so you took care of that whole transition process while you were on the submarine. So that's no joke. In my case, I did a shore tour. The reason being, it's like, I was so busy on the submarine, I couldn't really plan for transition. So how did you, manage that transition process while you're on the boat, like getting set up for your next job? Were there particular resources you leveraged, or, especially like during COVID times when it was a lot harder to talk to people, kind of one-on-one. So just want to hear a little bit about that, kind of like your last year on the submarine and how you negotiated your exit and next move.
Being pretty stressful because I didn't have like a certain date I was separating. And in the traditional Navy way, they kind of wait forever to like tell you if you're approved or if you can start planning for the next step. And I remember we were trying to buy a house up here because things were just like getting crazy up here. So I had to do a power of attorney or to let my husband do that. So my husband was like my main resource because I think he was mostly in port while I was, because I deployed up until like a month before I separated. And they sent me home mid-deployment so that I could separate. It was a stressful time. And I'm lucky that I kind of already had a position in a place I was going. I do not envy people that try and get out directly from their tour. Like, that is quite a challenge. And depending on your chain of command, like, they're not always the easiest to kind of give you the time and space and resources that you need to like get that all together. So I was very fortunate that kind of I had my family helping me back home in Allentown, and my husband kind of also preparing to close up all the Navy stuff. So
yeah, it's the chain of command thing is definitely, it's real, right? Because the second you drop that letter of resignation, especially in the submarine force, you're dead to the chain of command. So they're not too happy about it. So I imagine that was a little tough negotiating with them after you had done that. And so one question I had was how you were able to study, prepare for the GMAT while you were deployed, or did you just do that once you got back and were working at Solar Tech?
So I tried to start on that last deployment. I like bought the Kaplan books, and I was like, that was my plan on my offgoing. But I really didn't seriously start until I got off of the boat and moved. And then that's pretty much was one of my main focuses, was to get into a program and then start a program. It maybe took 3 or 4 months to study for, and I ended up meeting my goals for the GMAT. So, and having a new school background is definitely like quite a benefit when it comes to studying for the GMAT. It's a very pattern oriented test. So
yeah, that it is. Because if there's anything nukes do, it's take tests. It's
like, yes.
The tests never stop. And it was funny because taking it back, the GMAT, like, I'd actually struggled with the math aspect of the GMAT, which I didn't expect I would do. It's basically like high school algebra, but at Nukes, so like we're essentially doing multivariable calculus and calculating fuel plate depletion, but like it was like trying to calculate like the angles that were in a particular shape or things like that. I found pretty tricky. So it was a humbling experience. But yeah, would you mind sharing any like tips and tricks you had with our listeners, or how you helped prepare yourself for it?
Yeah, I did Kaplan does like a self-paced course, and they send you a book, and they have all these little practice tests. And that was really the only it. And I think they have some veteran discounts, but I think I just paid for it out of pocket. And that was really the major preparation that I did was through Kaplan. And I took one at the 3 month point, and I was prepared to take another one if I needed to. And then I ended up doing well enough to at least submit an application. And kind of like I said, most of my peers that were also in the submarine community that are going the GMAT business school path, like they all kind of found the GMAT is not the most intimidating of steps to application. So.
Well, then I'm the outlier. I thought that GMAT was pretty tough myself. Yeah, to that point, we'd like to talk about the experience you had with your service school mentor, how they helped you prepare for the applications you had to Wharton's MBA program, and any advice you have for applicants that are thinking about going that similar route.
Yeah, so I was paired with, I think he was a 2004 grad. No, that doesn't sound right. 2014 grad of Academy grad, and he was a NUCSWO. And he did the EMBA program out in San Francisco at Wharton, and had like pretty much recently done it. And he also runs a business with his spouse. So, and in a lot of aspects, it was like a fairly comfortable match. Like he kind of had a very similar background and a very similar like next stage of life similarity to me. And he did a lot of application review, so the resume review and the essay review. And we had connected over Skype, kind of to do a few discussions. And I don't really keep in contact with him anymore, but I definitely found it useful and kind of to ease the tension of like, hey, am I even like competitive enough for this program? Is it like the right thing to do? Like, and because I had a lot of the same, like, oh, maybe like I should do full time or, but he kind of really made it seem like, no, you don't have to go to a full time program, even though that's like the more conventional path. So.
Gotcha. Oh, that's that's awesome. And we do try to pair people with other people with similar backgrounds as far as our ambassadors go. It might not be, a one for one match, kind of like it sounds like you had, but it's definitely pretty close. And yeah, in my case, I had the same experience. I had a ambassador who was looking to go the similar route, the full time route. He had made the mistake of going to Harvard Business School, but didn't hold that against him. He was still pretty useful in the process. So just quick plug for our ambassador program. So we would, if you need help with your MBA application, we will be able to pair you with someone who can give you those words of wisdom that you need. And then once you've done it, we definitely appreciate it if you come back, pay it forward, and serve as an ambassador yourself. And so the big thing I'd like to start talking about now is the role you have in your company, what you all do, what your day-to-day looks like, for our listeners who may be interested in going the smaller business route. So interested to hear like how many people you manage, what you all do, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so a little background on solar tech. So my husband and I are third generation. It started in my grandparents' garage. And for a very long time, it was mostly just a manufacturing company where we make trailers with either aero boards or message boards that are solar powered for traffic control. So you see them on construction zones all the time or in like stadium parking lots directing traffic. That's like our main product line. And then like as technology advanced and everything, we're like very quickly becoming more of like a tech company. We do GPS asset tracking, and we do some smart traffic management software as a service products where we like we help DOTs and site project managers better manage their and optimize their traffic flow through like dynamic traffic control, basically. And right now the company is about 100 people total. About 80 of them are on the shop floor, and then 25 or so are on in the office. I am the CFO, so I have four people, four direct reports. I have an accounts payable, accounts receivable, and then I have our IT and data systems managers as well.
Oh, cool. And so you operate out of Allentown, but you do you sell your products nationwide, or what's kind of like your sales territory?
Mostly North America. So we do a little bit of international. We do a fair amount up in Canada, but like 90 plus percent of it is North America.
Cool. Good stuff. So if you're driving down the highway and see one of those buckle ups, it's like one of those, like, buckle up, save a life type, signs. That's could very well be one of yours. Am I right?
Yes.
Very cool. And, interested, you're talking like 100-person company, similar size to a, a submarine, crew. I wanted to hear a little bit about how you've kind of leveraged your experience as a naval officer serving on a submarine and taken those lessons and experiences you got from your time in the military and applied them to your business career.
I think one of the most valuable things kind of that the Navy teaches you is to kind of get over that, like, oh, hey, I'm only 24 years old. Like, I can't, this is like out of my wheelhouse. Like, the military really kind of makes you step up, and whether it's a crisis or it's just increased responsibilities, like, I think that has been the most useful experience to kind of bring forward into the business world where, hey, like, I have these senior VP titles and these chief financial officer titles, and I've taken accounting 101 and I have half an MBA. And I guess a lot of people kind of refer to that as a little bit of like imposter syndrome. But the military really kind of gives you that confidence of like, hey, like, if I don't have everything I need now or all the resources I have now, like, I know for sure I can figure it out. Or I know for sure, like, I have the ability to find who can help, where you don't just sit there and suffer in silence or freeze. I think that that has really been, for both my husband and I, the most useful thing the Navy can give you for your future career.
Gotcha. And interested to hear what your experience has been like operating in a, a smaller company. Many of our listeners are weighing their options about whether to go, do the small business route, start their own company or work for a larger corporation. So kind of wanted to hear some of your perspectives on, like, the good, the bad, and things that people can consider when going to work for, a smaller family-owned business.
You already said it's a similar size to like a ship, so we know everybody here, right? You can recognize all your employees. I know probably at least 95 of them by name. And it feels close, and I know it's cheesy that, like, oh, it feels like a family business, but, like, you really, like, these people are, like, depending on you to make, like, the correct decision because you're their livelihood, and we have a couple people that the whole family works for us, so they're really relying on us to kind of make the right decisions and be able to support them. And I mean, and being an owner, being owners of the company comes with like a lot of perks. Like, I bring my dog to work. I have a very flexible schedule as long as I communicate with people. Like, the fact that I can even go to school, like, I'm paying for Wharton through Solar Tech. So the business owner side definitely has its benefits. So.
Gotcha. And one thing I'm interested in hearing about is the role of a CFO. Like, what's your day-to-day like as a chief financial officer?
So most of it is making sure, looking at the money going in, looking at the money going out, and making sure it kind of all makes sense and adds up. That's like the top level summary. And then being kind of involved in those decisions of, hey, where are we going to invest resources? If we have any constraints or anything that is going to limit us, because like we're 100% family owned and 100% organically grown. So like where are we going to get funding from if we need funding, or how much do we need to take on these projects, or we have to choose between multiple projects? Which ones are we going to pursue? Because we want to grow. Like, we're in a phase where we're like ready to kind of take that next step to a bigger, more mature company. It's tough to do without, 100% organically. And that's one of the challenges that kind of the whole executive team is involved in. And then the day-to-day, just managing payables and receivables and any discrepancies that come up with either vendors or customers being contentious or wrong or just needing something. that's mostly the day-to-day, so.
Gotcha. And, I'd really love to hear how you prepared for this role, because you're going through your MBA now, but this is a pretty different job than you did in the military. Like, understanding money versus understanding nuclear power You know, they're both complex things that are uniquely challenging. They both involve numbers, but they're so different. So coming into this role, how did you prepare for it, and how did you essentially drink through the fire hose and get prepped for it?
Oh, I'm still drinking through the fire hose. I've only been in this position since October when my mom passed. And kind of they wanted to keep the CFO role in the family because that's kind of one of the most sensitive information roles. And so, I mean, most of my formal business preparation was in my first two terms at Wharton's at EMBA. And I'm fortunate to have like an incredible team working for me and an incredible accountants and insurance brokers. Like if any of our external parties have know what happened and know that it's drinking from a fire hose, and they've really kind of saved us from totally just flopping around and twitching. And my dad's been at the company for almost 30 years, and he has an EMBA, and he's very, very familiar with the company and the industry, and he's been helping me as much as he can. So the plan was kind of always to assume this role. It just got truncated by the loss of my mom. So now it's just kind of like getting up to speed as fast as I can so that we don't have any hiccups and everything is just smooth and comfortable and kind of ready to move forward and take on some new projects by just trying to survive. So.
Gotcha. And again, sorry about the loss of your mom. And just a segue here, you mentioned learning about the financial aspect of your job during your first couple semesters at Wharton. A Wharton MBA is no joke. I did the MBA full-time. I'm not sure how I could have possibly managed it along with a full-time job. So for our listeners who are considering, you know, the EMBA route, how have you described what an EMBA is, how it differs from the traditional MBA, and how you've been able to balance that with your work commitments?
Yeah, so EMBAs, they're executive MBAs. The majority of the people that are in the program are somewhere in the middle of their career. It's not usually someone that's just looking to do a career pivot or looking for like transition between two roles. Most of my peers are a lot more established in their industries. And typically the requirements are that you have like a longer year, you have some more years of experience, and that you have some leadership and things to kind of bring to the class when you are discussing business school stuff. So Wharton's and a lot of EMBAs are either like on a weekend or they're hybrid. Wharton's is every other Friday, Saturday on campus. So I drive down to Philadelphia, go to school, and then come back. And then 2 weeks later, I go back down. And they're really, I mean, I think the workload is, they know that you're working. So they know that you're either like a medical professional, a law professional, you're a professional in some sort. So while there is still like a fair amount of course material that you need to learn, it is tailored to understanding that you have other obligations, like another job, a family, like got other stuff going on. And you can kind of leverage your company or your organization experience with the EMBA or with the MBA learning. And they really do encourage that, to kind of apply what you're doing right now to your current organization or your current role or something you could do. And that was kind of the most attractive part of the EMBA, was that, hey, like I have a company to kind of apply, even though it's a small private company, like I still have a company to look at balance sheets or a company to look at like management styles and stuff. So like you still have something to kind of compare it to while you're learning the theory and the book work behind it.
Gotcha. And, for me, my experience in the full-time MBA was that it's generally people looking to pivot in their careers. The age demographic, on the young side, 24 to, mid 30s, typically, say 3 to 10-ish years of work experience. The veterans kind of skewed a little bit older, but the bottom line was everybody was going to that MBA because they wanted to pivot essentially to a different industry. Now, what I'd like to hear is your take on kind of the typical breakdown of your, an EMBA cohort from your experience at Wharton. Like who are your peers? Like, what industries do they work in? What are their goals with the degree? And if you were a veteran weighing your options between the MBA or the EMBA, what would kind of push someone towards the EMBA route?
So we still have a fair amount of veterans that are at the end of career in the EMBA program. So I might have like kind of misspoke when I said, oh, none of these people are career pivoting. It's more of like, hey, they're already like a professional level. They're looking for like a higher executive level path after the MBA, vice like a management consultant role somewhere. But the background of most people are consultants, medical professionals, law professionals, people that have already reached kind of a senior level role in one industry that kind of want to take the next step to either do their own firm or kind of run a business in that industry, is the major demographic of people. And I think that's the main driver between doing like a full-time MBA or doing an EMBA is that you have other things like another job, or you have like a lot of them have kids and a lot of them have families. And it's just more complementary to the lifestyle to have something on the weekends and something in the evenings, vice moving somewhere and living there and going Monday through Thursday, like during the day in class and taking a break from the workforce.
Very cool. Oh, cool. So what are you, so I think like now you're going to be wrapping it up. Is it going to be next year? So you've got another year left on it.
I've got another year, so May 2025 is when I'll be done.
Very cool. Are there any extracurriculars that you're able to do as an EMBA, or like, have you been able to plug into the Wharton Vets Club at all? 'Cause I know when I was there a few years ago, we had looked to open it up a little bit more to the MBA students to make sure. I know you, like most of you, weren't Philly based, but whenever you're in town, come and socialize with us, have a beer. And I'd done a venture where we had some EMBA students on it, but I was just curious if you had been able to get kind of involved in the community as an EMBA student, or if it was more just kind of classroom focused.
Yeah, my experience is there. We have a pretty involved social committee, which I was surprised
Oh.
about, because I think like this is kind of a post-COVID, we're the first class to like really have a lot of things going on every weekend. They have whiskey clubs, they have pickleball clubs, they have all sorts of things, and including the vets club. I know a lot of the other vets are more involved than I am. But it is hard because like you are there when the full time is not. So they're I think they're Monday through Thursday, and then we're Wednesday, Saturday. So
Yep.
you don't unless you make an effort to cross over socially, which the Vets Club is more like very open to you being a part of. But a lot of the events are hard for you to make because they're during your class time or during your class weekend. So, but no, there's plenty of clubs, there's plenty of social opportunities and extracurriculars. I haven't really been involved in any of them because I've just been so busy at home. My husband and I are also expecting our first baby, so
Oh,
getting ready for the
congratulations.
baby. Thank you. And at work and everything, I'm like, oh, I would love to. I have FOMO of all the stuff I'm missing out on, but yeah, I haven't really been able to take advantage of a lot of the social and networking opportunities that the EMBA program's providing for us.
Oh, wow. So you are the CFO of a company, finishing an EMBA, and about to have your first child. That is very, very impressive.
Yeah, it's a lot all at once. So
That's incredible. So I thought that I had a tough time at business school. So you've got the experience. So, but as a nuke submariner, I'd fully trust your fortitude to make it through all that. So, with that, we've kind of coming up on time for our conversation. So I just wanted to, and I know you're very busy. So I just wanted to turn the floor over to you to see if you had any thoughts, words of wisdom, or anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, before we depart.
I mean, I guess another plug for service to schools. I mean, having those resources available is just like so helpful to know other people have kind of like already taken that path, and like the research and the questions that you have already been asked and already been answered. Like, I can't recommend it enough to anybody that is trying to transition out of the military. Not just for business. Like, I have a friend that's going same class as me that's going to medical school, and I know they're still building up their medical support side, but I'm like, hey, like I mean, it's a starting point that points you to everything else. And that's getting your foot one step closer to your next path is really, really helpful. So
cool. Well, thank you so much for the plug and for all you do. Such an impressive story. And you know, my mind is still blown by how much you've got on your plate right now. It's humbling and for me. So, Amanda, thank you so much for your time, for all you've done, and for how well you've represented the submarine force.
Yes, thank you.
That's all we have for this episode. Join us next week, same time, same place, where we share more Service to School stories. Service to School Stories is hosted by Sydney Mathis, Chief Program Officer, and Alec Emmert, Service to School CEO. Our podcast is produced and edited by our Director of Communication, Amanda Tobias. Service to School is a 501c3 nonprofit providing free college admission support to transitioning service members and veterans. Join us next week and follow us for more on your favorite social media platforms.